April 9th, 2024, on Kaf Gimal Amud Bet. If you count from where the Mishnah, the bottom of the Amud is upward, count up 11 lines to where the first word on the line is Hanahu. If you recall, we began this yesterday, we talked about Hanahu Izeh Debet Tarbu. There were Izim is goats. There were goats of the family whose name was Tarbu. Dehavu mafsedele leRav Yosef. They were diminishing. They were eating from the fields of Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef is watching, I guess, on a daily, weekly basis. His crops, his fields go bad because the Tarbu family are bringing or allowing for their goats to go graze on his goods. Amar le Abaye, Rav Yosef says to his student Abaye, Zil means go, Emar lehu lemarayu, tell the owners, in other words, the Tarbu family, delisne'inu, make certain that they understand they need to safeguard, they need to seclude, they need to keep their animals off of my field. Amar le, the response of Abaye, and we dealt with the halakha on this matter yesterday, Tosafot, and Rif, and Rosh, and Rabbeinu Hananel. Amar le, amai ezil, said Abaye to Rabbah, why should I go? To Rav Yosef, why should I go? Di azilna, says Abaye to his rabbi Rav Yosef, if I were to go, amreli, they'll respond to me, ligdor mor gedera be'are. They're going to say, my master, meaning you, Rav Yosef, should build a gate on his field. In other words, it's not our responsibility to per se keep our goats off of your field if you haven't gated your field. Vi igadar, says the Gemara, and if that's the case, that you need to build a gate, and again, we dealt with the ramifications in the halakha that yesterday, but now the Gemara just wonders out loud, according to Abaye's logic, that you're supposed to build a gate as a field owner, and if you didn't build a gate as a field owner, it's not the person whose animal came onto your field's responsibility to pay for shen or regil, it's your own responsibility, your loss. If that's the case, shen dehiyev rahmana hechi mishkachat la. Says the Gemara, if the expectancy of every field owner is that they build a gate, how do you find a case in that where you're obligated, which the Torah says, as an owner of an animal which eats from and benefits from the crops of another person? In other words, if they built a proper gate, so then my animal won't be able to enter onto the field. If they didn't build a proper gate, according to the logic of Abaye, well then, the field owner is the one who was negligent, and I shouldn't have to pay. You won't find a case, says the Gemara. Of course, it quickly gives two answers. According to your logic, Abaye, that any field owner needs to build a gate. If they don't build that gate, if they don't safeguard their goods, they don't keep their items closed off to the outside world, to animals from entering, well, then it's the responsibility of the field owner. We say it's his negligence, and as a result, you don't have to pay anything. When do you ever find shin, which is hayav from the Torah? The Torah, of course, says, if my animal wanders onto your field and eats from your field, I'm liable. Why would I be liable? Either it can't enter onto your field because you built a strong gate, or it can, and then it's on you, says the Gemara Keshe Hatra. First answer, perhaps the case would be where the animal tunnels underneath, it digs underneath the gate. In such a case, even though you built a gate, you did as much as you could, the owner of the animal needs to realize that his animal might wander off and do a lot of work. The fact that he was so negligent in watching his animals makes it his responsibility. Again, this is all according to Abaye / Nathan Shalom's claim that the gate is an absolute necessity for the field owner. If he doesn't have a gate, we say it's his own negligence. How would the person who diminishes, depletes from his crops ever be hayav? The answer is if it tunneled under iname, alternatively, iname means or as well. Another answer, denafil guda belelia, that the gate fell at the nighttime. And since the gate fell without his knowledge, and in the morning he didn't realize or didn't have time to build it back up, it's not the field owner's negligence, it's rather the person who let his izim, his goats or anything else, enter into that field's responsibility. It's an amazing thing, though. It emerges, according to Abaye, who, again, Rabbeinu Hananel is posek like him, Rosh is partially posek like him, if you don't have a gate, well then it's not on me that my dog came onto your field and ruined it. If you do have a gate, Well, then the only times when I'm going to be liable are in funny situations, because otherwise I'm going to say it's on you. Either your gate fell at night and you didn't know about it, or my dog tunneled underneath. Otherwise, your gate should have been strong enough, locked up, and in a way that nothing could enter on. And that's what the Gemara ends us with. Again, without a Pesach Halacha, although Tosafot was very clear, based on Rif, that we wouldn't follow Abaye. But the Gemara continues, and the Gemara's continued lines over here seem to support a counter notion to the Abaye claim. Again, Abaye's claim is, if you don't have a gate, it's on you, says the Gemara, Machriz Rav Yosef V'itema Rabbah. Either Rav Yosef, who was the rabbi we had just a moment ago, who sent Abaye, go tell them to keep their animals off my field, or else. V'itema, and there's another version, V'itema is a compound word, V'im Tomar, a different version, Rabbah, they're contemporaries. Rabbah was actually the uncle of Abaye. He took care of Abaye, was orphaned, and Rabbah took care of him. Anyway, this was the announcement. Disalik, machriz means they declared, they proclaimed. One of these two rabbis made the following proclamation. I imagine it in today's day and age, it's the viral message which goes out. It's the signs which are hung on the street corners. What was the statement? The salekin le'ila, those who go up to the high place, meaning those who leave Bavel to move to Eretz Yisrael, udenachtin le'tata'a, and those who go down to the lower place. That means those who go from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, meaning irrespective of where you're coming from and where you're going, be aware of the following. Residents of Israel coming to Bavel, of Bavel going to Eretz Yisrael, Hanei Izeh Deshukah. If there are, Izeh again means goats, Deshukah. Deshukah, Rashi explains, Dekatzbe, which are going to be slaughtered. Explains Rashi, these are goats, and we'll explain the significance in a moment, which are purposed to be slaughtered and sold in the marketplace. You're not really keeping them around for grazing. So then how come you haven't slaughtered them yet? You want to save them for the market day, because then you'll be able to sell them at a higher value. So you don't want to slaughter them now, they'll go bad. If you slaughter them now and you sell them, you'll get less for your, you'll get less money for it. Well, that's the case. So again, we're in the middle of the proclamation, the declaration of Rav Yosef or Rabbah. Anyone who has Izeh Deshukah, anyone who has those goats which are purposed to be slaughtered, and you're letting them wander around, Demafsedeh, and they're eating off of other people's fields, Rashi points out as well, even if they're eating in Rashut Rabim, Rashi makes clear in a moment, Matrinan Bemarayu Tereh, Utilata zimnin. What we'll do is matre, we know that word matre, hatra'a means a warning. We'll give a warning bimarayu to the owners of those goats. Tere means two, utlata or three times, zimnin means times. And isayit sayit, if the owner of those goats listens, great, he listens, he safeguards them, we won't touch his goats. Vi'ila, and if not, we, with the authority of Betin and the governors of the community, Amrinan le, we're going to say to him, the person who owns those goats and is saving them for the slaughter day, Tiv amashata. Tiv means to sit, like ye tiv means to sit. We switch the taf with the sheen in Aramaic. Shev amashata. Rashi explains mashata is the place where you would sell your meat. The kabel zuzach, and receive the money for what it's worth right now. In other words, piecing the whole statement together and then dealing with some of the details, it goes like this. Anyone who has these goats, we'll talk about the specifics in a moment, I'm going to give you two or three warnings, meaning three warnings. It's a colloquial, it's a way of speaking, two or three times. I'm going to tell you, we're going to tell you, safeguard them because they're getting dangerous. They're eating from other people's lands. Isayit sayit, if you listen, fantastic, right? Hold on to them. If not, we're going to, translating based on Rashi, demand that you take your goat and slaughter it today. But I don't want to slaughter it today. I'd like to save it for the market day. I'm going to get 20% appreciation on it. I'm sorry, you didn't listen to us. It's not that we're going to seize it and make you lose entirely. We're going to allow for you to keep it, slaughter it now, and get take whatever, kabil zuzah. What's that?
The Bedin cannot afford to pay for the damage.
Stand there. One second. Wonderful question. Charlie says, why are we doing this? Just make him pay damage. Give me 1 second. We'll read Tosafot in just a moment. First and foremost, Rashi points out the fact that we just use the Lashon demafsedeh, that they're depreciating, that they're damaging, and makes us believe that this isn't, per se, the standard obligations to Charlie's question of, we can bring you to Beit Din and make you pay. Remember, if it's Shen Birshut Rabim, there's no payment. Nonetheless, according to Rashi's reading of the Gemara, Rabba or Rav Yosef, whoever was making this declaration, the strength of their declaration was, even though we can't make you responsible for the eating in Rashut Rabim, we're going to give this a fascinating Gemara. It means the rabbis, according to Rashi's reading of this, found a way to safeguard people's goods even in the public area. I thought you told me, the only time I'm obligated for shin is if it's in Rishut HaNizak, if your animal comes onto my property. That's right. However, what we can do still with the jurisdiction and the strength of Beit Din is the following. We'll give you warnings. We saw your animal going. And it's true, someone left his goods out in the street, someone was bringing it by in your animal. And it's true, according to Torah law, you don't need to pay, according to Rashi's reading of the Gemara. Nonetheless, we don't want your animals being dangerous any longer. We're not going to seize it. We're not going to kill it. We're going to demand that you slaughter it and get whatever you can get for it right now. That's the reading of the Gemara according to Rashi. If you look at Rashi, where is the Rashi that I'm referring to? This one. Matrinan bemarayu. You have to just read his words carefully. We give the warning, imafsidan, if they continue to depreciate, to eat. Afilu birshut rabim. Rashi inserts those words. That's not the simple interpretation, Targimara. We never heard of Shin being Hayav in Rashut Rabim. It's still not Hayav in Rashut Rabim. Rashi is preempting the question of Charlie. Why are we doing this? Just bring them to Beit Din. Rashi's answer, in Beit Din, you can't obligate him to pay for this. But nonetheless, we want your damaging property out of the way. You're anyway going to slaughter it, so we make you slaughter it now.
So is it two or three?
It's colloquial. It means three. Means I'm going to give you two or three warnings. Means I'm going
to
give you three warnings.
You guys got to go to Beit
Din? No. Beit Din.
So you have to go to Beit Din. Tell
them. No, you don't need the warnings in Beit Din, per se.
You got to go to Beit Din and say, Joel's goats are on my property. Beit Din once. That goes again.
Yes.
Third
yes. Yes. Okay. It's something. It's something. It's better. It's better than you left your damaging goods out in the street. Tosafot's reading of the Gemara is different. Tosafot never suggests, doesn't mean they disagree, but they never suggest like Rashi that we're talking about Shem Birshut Rabim. If that's the case, you have Charlie's question. Why are we doing this funny thing? Warnings, take it and we'll slaughter it. According to Harambam, we're slaughtering it. According to Rashi, you slaughter it, but we force you to slaughter it. Why are we doing this whole business? If you look at... Okay, the Hidush is that even according to Jeffrey, we don't tell you to do that. We say you have rights to put in a Rashut Rabim. He has rights to eat from it, but we're going to give him a warning and we're going
to
get him out of the way.
It doesn't have to be the same person.
Absolutely. It's on the guy, not on the people who are damaged. Same thing as like a Shortam or Shor Mu'ad and that type. If you take a look at Tosafot on the right-hand side, it says, Tosafot dibura matchil hanau ized de shuka. First says Tosafot, davka behanahu dekayeme lishchita. First and foremost, explains Tosafot, we're talking specifically about the goats, which are going to be slaughtered anyway. In other words, you're only losing out the difference. I said 20%, it's probably even less than that. The difference of what you would have sold it on the market day as opposed to now. It's not as if this is old Betsy, which you're saving up for the, you know, for its milk and cheese, which you're using all the time, and we say to you now slaughter it.
Yeah.
What's that? It's like a knas. It's a knas to keep things safe. And as a result, again, if you're saving, it says Tosafot at the end, we'll read it in a moment, skip three lines in Tosafot for just a moment. Aval ez lehalba. If you have the goat for its milk, v'rachel gizata, or you have, what do we translate rachel as? I don't know.
A
no, what's that?
A ewe.
A ewe, yeah? Good. Legizata for its shearings, Yachol Lomar, the claim of the person who you're making the Bedina's warning, Kishi Azik Yeshalim. When it damages, I'll pay. In other words, you can't pull this knas unless anyway it was going to be slaughtered, and he's just losing a little bit. If he plans on having this long-time thing, taking from its milk, taking from its shearings, you wouldn't be. But now Tosafot needs to explain again. We still did. You better safeguard your animal. You don't from damaging other people's goods. Rashi, Reshut Rabim, Tosafot, probably Reshut Yahid. Because Tosafot, otherwise, Lefi Rashi, even though there's no Isur, this is the way I understand Rashi, we achieved status in Beit Din to safeguard even Reshut Rabim from Shein. We're not going to make you pay, but we're going to warn you and make certain that your animals are not damaging. Say it again. Because it's Beit Din's ability to do so. They're going to force him to do shechita on the animal. What authority does Beit Din have to do this? Takana, according to Rashi. I don't think so. It's not market week yet. You think so? Oh, interesting. Jeffrey's reading this Gemara, and that would make sense with the declaration. Those who are coming up are those who are going down. Interesting. I didn't realize that. Correct. That's what Tosafot's pointing out. But Jeffrey's pointing out this might not be a long-standing, year-long takana. It might be specifically, that's what he's being medayek in the words, those who are coming up from Israel, those who are going down from Bavel, meaning during market time, in the weeks leading up to it, we're going to make this sort of declaration because it's going to get dangerous in the streets, we want to safeguard, but we wouldn't per se year long. I hear you. Tosafot continues, it says, Ve'afal Gav, here's the question of Charlie, Afal Gav starts a question, it's an apology. She yishalimu ma shehiziku, even though ultimately speaking, and Tosafot reads it not like Rashi, that you're, it's shen bershut hanizak, he's eating from my property. As a result, Judah, he's 100% liable. If that's the case, so then why don't you just bring him to Beit Din? Why are we making warnings and forcing a slaughtering? It's a hassle. It's a hassle for the owners to have to go through a court hearing with witnesses, we're going to see in a moment as well, and going into Beit Din in order to get their money back. Instead, okay, you took a little bit of a loss today, you went to Beit Din, they authorized a warning. Tomorrow, you caught it on your field and it was eating an apple, you banished it, another warning. In other words, you don't need to go through an actual court hearing, which is a hassle. Furthermore, says Tosaf, vizimni named lekasa hadin, sometimes as well, you won't have witnesses. It's going to be messy, and as a result, this is another mechanism for safeguarding your goods, establishing that Beit Din will give this warning, and ultimately speaking, if you don't heed the warning, force you to slaughter your animal. So the answer to your question, Charlie, is twofold, or two options. Either according to Rashi, it's Reshu Tarabim, and as a result, we couldn't bring you to Beit Din, and so this will effectively clean up our streets. Alternatively, Tosafot says, you could go to Beit Din, and if it's not Omedit La'achila, if it's not going to be sold in the marketplace, we'll tell you to bring it to Beit Din, because the guy anyway was going to hold on to it, we're not going to force him to slaughter it. However, it's a hassle to go to Beit Din. Sometimes you're not even going to have witnesses. This is a mechanism. Without witnesses, I can walk into Beit Din, and they can issue a warning, and that's sufficient. We don't have the same rules and guidelines as regular Beit Din court here. What's the connection between this and that? No. This was not connected to Pipara. This was all a separate item. Now, in terms of that story with Rav Yosef and this follow-up, so Rabbeinu Hananel claims, remember what Rabbeinu Hananel, let's just bring it back to that. The last sugya, the last few lines which we read at the end of yesterday had Rav Yosef saying, student, Abaye, go reprimand them and tell them. It means according to Rav Yosef, he's the anti-Nathan Shalom. Abaye says, no, if you don't have a gate, you're in trouble. Says Rabbeinu Hananel, it's right here on the page, you can find it inside. Says Rabbeinu Hananel, this follow-up is Rav Yosef l'shitato. Rav Yosef now has this claim, everybody safeguard your animals because if they come onto anyone else's property, we're going to give a warning, we're going to slaughter it. Wait a second, says Rabbeinu Hananel. What, you don't have a gate? So either you read the Gemara as this is verifying and saying that even when you don't have a gate, your animal damages mine, you're still obligated. Or says Rabbeinu Hananel, no. Minority view, Rav Yosef, it was the same Rav Yosef as before him. That's the suggestion of Rabbeinu Hananel. Three warnings, now you have to slaughter. You were planning on slaughtering it anyway, slaughter it from now. Stand in your shop and sell it. Chalas.
But the goat owner has a loophole.
You don't have edim, you didn't bring them to Beit Din. Again, you have to imagine it's minor damage. If it's full damage and you have witnesses, take them to Beit Din and get your money. The understanding is it didn't cause such a super damage, but we still get it out of here. I don't want to have to deal with this every day.
They don't fall. The point is not to pay somebody back.
To get these animals, it's a preventative kenas, it appears, of the hachamim to make certain that people are safeguarding the animals. That's what we have then in our Gemara. Moving ahead. Say it again. And making certain that people's property is safeguarded as well, of course. Okay, next Mishnah. So the Mishnayot in our Perek started with Kesad HaRegel Mu'edit. We started with Regel. The next Mishnah talked about Shin. So those were the first two of that list of mu'adim that we saw in the Mishnah at the end of the first Perek. There's several cases of mu'ad. Shin and Regel we address. Now we need to deal with Keren when it's mu'ad. When does Keren become mu'ad? Of course, the Torah tells us after it gores several times. Let's deal with that in this next Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Ezehu tam ve'ezehu mu'ad. What's the definition of tam when we're dealing with Keren? And what's the definition of mu'ad? Now the Mishnah is never going to define what tam is because everybody knows what tam is. Tam is before it's mu'ad. It's going to define for us, however, when sometimes it goes to mu'ad status and then gets bumped back down to tam. So we'll have to address that in this Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, mu'ad. What's the definition of mu'ad? Kol she'he'idu bo shelosha yamim. It means that it had a warn. The word is she'he'idu. We'll deal with those words in the Gemara. But there's a warning and testimony about a goring 3 days. Doesn't say 3 days in a row. Three separate occasions. We have witnesses that this ox gored. I say it again.
Days.
Correct. This first opinion is very clear. It must be days. Take out the word warning. Forget I ever said that. We'll deal with that in Daf Kaf Dalet. According to this first approach, three in the same day is not considered mu'ad.
It has to be gored.
Keren.
I'm just saying, it can't be like severe damage. Keren, like it has to be healed.
Anything. Any keren, tolada, or av of keren. Yeah, easiest is to say gored. Vitam. And how do you get bumped back down to tam? And of course, major differences between mu'ad and tam, 100% or 50% payment, and min ha'aliyah or migufo, concepts we're already familiar with. How do you get bumped back down? Could you go back down in status? Do we say you trained your animal got sedated to the extent that it's calmer? Absolutely. Says this opinion of Bihuda, you now need 3 days of testimony, it sounds like, that it didn't gore. That's the first opinion. So Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is three separate days in order to establish mu'ad, three separate days in order to bring it back to tam. Rabbi Meir omer, mu'ad she'he'idu bo shelosha pe'amim. The opinion of Rabbi Meir, in contrast, is it doesn't need to be three separate days. Even if all in one day, three testimonies about three gorings, three kerens, mu'ad, v'tam. What's the definition of bringing it back down to tam? Any ox, any cow, which children could go up to it and pet it, and it won't gore them, that in and of itself brings it back down to tam.
Question.
Go ahead.
In the case of Mu'ad, a guy comes to Beit Din, testify this guy 1-3 times, 3 days in a row.
Leave warnings out. Witnesses. We didn't see warnings in them. We'll deal with your question in the Gemara. All right, we'll deal with your question.
Does it look like some? I mean, from the Sichah, you ever brought from Mu'ad
Say it again. Absolutely. Machlok Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, how? Rabbi Yehuda says 3 days of no goring goes back to Tam. Rabbi Meir says, even in 1 day, just if the children come up to it and pet it, it goes back down to Tam.
So it could be reverted back.
That's the absolutely. That's what the Mishnah is telling us. When the Mishnah says Ezu Mu'ad ve Ezu Tam, it means what's Mu'ad and what brings it back to Tam. Everybody agrees it could go back to Tam. Mahlok it exactly how. That's what we have here. Tosafot on the right hand side, Dibura Mathil Shiyuhu Hatinokot, the second to last one, begin with a question as well. Afal Gav, as I told you, Afal Gav is an apology, always starts a question. Afal Gav, even though the Adam itle mazala. That's it, that's their question. Adam itle mazala. Now, if you remember, it's been a long, long time. Daf beta mudbet, in our masechet, we mentioned these words. Adam yesh lo mazal. The word mazal sounds like luck of some sort. If you recall, Rashi had two interpretations. The first of the two we can work with for now means that a person, different than an animal, has knowledge, has an ability in some way to escape danger. It doesn't per se mean on the level of a gadol, of a high-level knowledge, but it means higher than animal knowledge. Well, that being the case, the context within which this was quoted on Daf Bet was the following. A mu'ad le adam, excuse me, that we can't say that a mu'ad for adam is a mu'ad le behema, or better yet, a mu'ad le behema is mu'ad le adam. In other words, if the ox is goring 3 times animals, now human beings come up to it and pet it, well, says Rabbi Meir, well, then it's not mu'ad any longer. Why not? Human beings petting it, human beings are smart. As it starts to ruffle itself, human beings take their hands off. It doesn't mean that an ox which came in contact with an ox is going to stay away as well. Let me repeat again. The fact that human beings, the Gemara told us, have a higher level intellect, are smarter with regards to staying away from danger, means that we can't compare them. What's that? That's what I'm telling. But first of all, it's 2 explanations in Rashi. Second of all, even when I talk about higher level knowledge, children, I could be wrong about this, have a higher level intellect than dogs for avoiding danger. In other words, I mean, I don't know, we have a doctor here, I'm not sure, but I believe you can explain it even according to that interpretation. What's that? No, but the children is the bigger hidush. Could be. Anyway, but the point is, Tosafot is bothered. Why is the fact that the ox didn't gore a human being proof that no longer will it gore animals? Very different. Human beings have a better way of avoiding danger than oxen. And as a result, even if a human being went up to it and pet it and didn't get damaged, it doesn't mean that this animal now is not going to damage other oxen. Says Tosafot, Mikol makom kevan shena'asa shafel kol kach shatinokot memashmeshin bo vaday hazar lekadmuto. Says Tosafot, maybe this is what you meant, Nathan. Says Tosafot, but let's be honest here. We're not even talking about a human coming in contact with it and avoiding being damaged. We're talking about children going up to it and petting it. That much. A child walked up to an ox, which yesterday and the day before and the day before, or all in 1 day, has gored 3 times, and children are playing with it, hey, like it's a little puppy. Clearly that ox is no longer dangerous. No, I thought human beings are more crafty and they stay away from danger. They are. But not with, when you pet a ox, you walk up to a bison and you start playing with it. Clearly, if it's not hurting you, it's no longer dangerous. Then Tosafot continues, that's the first issue. Tosafot then continues and wants to know the following. We had a machloket, a dispute in our Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. What were the two opinions? Well, with regards to becoming to mu'ad is one issue. What about with regards to becoming tam? With regards to becoming tam, according to the first opinion, that of Rabbi Yehuda, how do you become tam after your mu'ad? 3 separate days in which you didn't gore, right? According to the Bimeir, if the kids go up to it and pet it. What about according to the Bimeir? No kids are petting it. Kids wouldn't pet it. But for 3 days now, after it gored 3 times, it hasn't gored. Is it now tam? Do you understand? Oh, do we have a mahloket that Rabbi Meir is just being more lenient, he's more leeway, either 3 days of no goring or petting it, or is he fundamentally disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda says you need 3 days of no goring. Rabbi Meir says that won't cut it. What you need is something even more than that, children going up to it and petting it. Says,
can't
be. Kempe. Kempe.
That's what I'm saying. So Kempe.
Kempe. It needs to be in the same position. Otherwise, it's not Tam. Why? Just because it was Latin, not Kempe. But again, whatever it is according to the Biuda, that it's in its regular way and it's not goring, does that stand, is that strong enough for the Bimeir as well? Or does the Bimeir need more, that only if you pet it? Says Tosafot, Veloba. Right, right. That's the answer to Jeffrey. That's right. I'm sorry. Jeffrey, Judah points out, explicit in Rashi, Shiro Eshivarim, Ve'no Nogeah Hazer L'tamuto. And as I said, Kempi, Judah's much better than me. Says, it's Mefurash in Rashi. It means that you see them and you don't touch them. Okay, not you, the animal. It says to Tosafot, Ve'lo bar Rabbi Meir Lema'et, Shelo To'il Hazara Shelosha Yamim. Rabbi Meir, according to Tosafot, is not coming to tell you, well, 3 days of seeing the oxen and not goring them is not enough. He's not saying it. Elehishmi'anu da'afilu b'yom echad. He's telling you, you have one of two options. You want to bring your animal back down to Tam? Either 3 days of no goring, or 1 day and the children go up to it and pet it. Pe'amim di'ika hazara, kigon al yideh tinokot, ve'shalosh pe'amim b'yom echad, nira de'en mo'il lididei lehazara, afapishim mo'il ha'ada'a, and so on and so forth. Tosafot continues with another part. So let's just make that clear one more time. So Tosafot claims that according to Rabbi Meir, the second opinion in the Mishnah, you have one of two ways of bumping it down to Tam. Either 3 days of no goring or petting. That's the way Tosafot goes. On this page, we don't need to read it, but this is Perusha Mishnayot of Harambam. Harambam's reading of the Mishnah and his Pesach Halacha and his Mishneh Torah is not so. He's very clear. He goes, on the one hand, it needs to be 3 separate days in order to become a Mu'ad, like the first opinion, like Rabbi Yehuda. And in order to become Tam, it needs to be that children go up to it and pet it. 3 days of abstaining is not sufficient. There's a fundamental machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, probably having to do with the psychology of an animal. The fact that the animal didn't gore for 3 days, according to Rabbi Meir, is not sufficient to say it's now Tam. No, it just didn't for whatever reason. That's what you have from Harambam in his Perusha Mishnayot. Yes?
Twice a week, every Thursday and Friday, but not the rest of the week for forever.
No, because if it has, we don't see this yet. We'll talk about this at a later point. The Gemara doesn't explicitly address it in this way. But if there's a routine to its goring, it gores every Shabbat, so even though you spread it out weeks, that's considered mu'ad. The fact that in between it didn't. Because if it's not an exact pattern, and you have those 3 days in between, according to the Bihuda, it becomes Tam. According to Harambam, Posek Lahalacha, according to the Bimeir, absolutely not. But that's a... Yes, according to... Rambam says the only way to take it away from being Mu'ad is by children going and petting it.
So you're going to put a child there...
I don't know, quite the opposite. You're probably not. I mean, if you're a crazy guy who wants to protect the animal over your child, you're going to do so. Effectively, it's always going to be a Mu'ad. Once it became a Mu'ad, it's always going to be a Mu'ad. That's how Harambam goes on this. Okay, well, that's what we have then. The Tosafot finishes and talks about something that we're going to address in greater length in the Gemara with regards to, even though if in three, in other words, Tosafot goes on and says, according to the Bimeir, where 3 times in 1 day makes it Mu'ad, and their reading of that same opinion, the Bimeir, 3 times makes it Tam, if it abstains from goring, could you do 3 times in 1 day goring becomes mu'ad, and then Salah, 3 times in 1 day not goring, it becomes Tam? Says Tosafot, that far we don't go, and they explain, you know, that's what Tosafot writes here at the end. It says, V'shalosh pe'amim b'yom echad nira de'en mo'il lididel l'hazara. It doesn't work to bring it back down to Tam. Afa pishe mo'il ha'ada'a. And he says he finds this with Rabbi Shimon in the Gemara. Okay, that's what we have thus far in the Mishnah. So we had a machlok Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, about the definition of mu'ad and in turn the definition of Tam as well. Says the Gemara, let's deal with Pesukim. They had a machlok, and again, whether it needs to be on 3 separate days or all in 1 day is sufficient. Ma'ita ama, says the Gemara, de Rabbi Yehuda. first opinion which maintains the only way it becomes a shon mu'ad is if on three separate days it gores, gore on Sunday and gore on Monday and gore on Tuesday. Only way it's going to become mu'ad is in such a fashion. Why so? Why not three times in one day? Who told you that? Amar Abaye. Abaye says there's a derasha from the pasuk. The pasuk, I'm reading it very quickly, is in Shemot Perek Kaf Aleph. That's in Parashat Mishpatim. Pasuk says, Onoda, if it's known, Kishor Nagahu, it's a goring animal, or a goring ox, mitemol shilshom velo yishmerenu be'alav. Let's translate those words. Mitemol, mitemol means from yesterday, shilshom means in 2 days ago, velo yishmerenu be'alav, and the owner doesn't safeguard. A lot of extra words. It doesn't just say it's a goring animal. It says it's a goring animal which is known from yesterday and 2 days ago, and the owner doesn't watch over it. What does the pasuk say? Under those circumstances, you pay 100%. Here's the derasha. My ta'amad Rabbi Yehuda, 4 lines from the bottom. Amar Abaye, timol. The pasuk could have said timol yesterday. Had. That tells me day one. Mitimol, the extra mem, because it seems to be miutar, an extra mem. Tere, that tells you 2 days. Shilshom means 2 days ago, but that's my third mention, because mitemol, temol, shilshom, telata, that's my third. Velo yishmerenu be'alav, that final mention, and then the owner doesn't safeguard it. Atan l'nigihar ve'it, that's the fourth goring, at which point you're hayav 100% for your animal, which has gored now 3 times. That's the derasha. So again, the derasha goes as follows. The derasha, according to Rabbi Yehuda, as the Gemara says, is three mentions in the pasuk, timol, mitimol, and shilshom velo yishmerenu is our fourth. Rava amar, Rava disagrees with Abaye, seemingly. Amar, and we're just going to read it like Rashi today, and tomorrow we'll come back and understand Tosafot. Timol mitimol had. That says Rava, this fancy business of timol and the extra mem, mitimol, that just counts as day one. Shilshom, the pasuk says, yesterday and 2 days ago, tere. Velo yishmerenu ha'idna hayav. And if you don't safeguard it the third time, you're hayav. According to Rava, when are you hayav 100% on gore? What gore? Sounds like on the third goring. According to Abaye, it sounds like on the fourth goring. Do we read that? So Rashi, in fact, explains the Gemara like that. Tosafot says, inconceivable. No such thing. But look at Rashi on the left-hand side. Atal l'negihar ve'it, shim lo shemaro, v'nagach negihar ve'it, this is according to Abaye, mishalem me'aliyah nezek shalem, aval ashilishit, but on the third goring, according to the first interpretation of the Gemara, palganis kahu de mishalem. That's the way Harari's been saying it throughout the Masechet on purpose. That's the way we go. 3 times tam, 4th time mu'ad. Ravaz derasha is v'lo yishmerenu. It sounds like ha'idna benigiha shilishit hayav alei nezek shalem. According to this reading of Rashi, on the 3rd time you're already hayav 100%. That's what Tosafot, this bottom Tosafot, says can't be. Several proofs against it. They even quote from Rashi at the beginning of, in Masechet Bava Batra, who says very clearly, there's no machloket here fundamentally. How do you read the Gemara according to that? You read it like this. Timol mitimol had. That's the first time. Shilshom tere. Velo yishmerenu means. And then a 3rd time. Ha'idna hayav. Now you'll be hayav if it gores a 4th time. But it means that in the scheme of things, we found 2 derashot from the same pasuk with regards to how you determine and discover. According to the Biuda, you need 3 separate days in order to establish it as a shor mu'ad. Is there a mahloki between Abaye and Rava fundamentally about time 3 or time 4? According to Rashi here in Bava Kama Daf Kaf Gimel, yes. According to Rashi in Bava Batra, no. According to Tosafot, absolutely not. We generally, if not always, assume it's only on the 4th time that you're hayav nezek shalem. We'll continue with this tomorrow. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen. Amen. Amen.